Welcome to Zichu Daf Siman, member by Avram Goldar, and today we're Zechus Yavamis, Daf Peches, the 10th Perakei Isha Rabba. So the three daps we're going to focus on. Number one, after numerous attempts were made to bring a source that one witness is believed to permit a woman to remarry, the Gemara now explains that the source is at the Rabbanan. For Rabbi Zera said, Mitoch Chomer Shech Marta Aleha Besofa, he called to Aleha Betchila. Because of the severity with which you were severe at the end by imposing so many penalties on her in the event that she remarries and her first husband reappears, you were lenient with her at the beginning and allowed her to remarry based on the testimony of one witness. When the Gemara asks, don't be machmir with her at the end, don't be makel with her at the beginning, and instead just require two witnesses as is biblically mandated, answers, out of concern that the woman will be left as an aguna, the Rabbanan were lenient with her and permitted her to marry based on the testimony of a single witness. Point number two, the Mishnah Duff Pei Zayin Amabe stated that if a woman remarried based on a single witness, she must leave both husbands if her original husband reappears. Shmuel said she must only leave the second husband where she did not dispute him, referring to the man who came claiming to be her original husband. But where she disputes him and claims that he's an imposter, she doesn't leave the second husband. The Gemara clarifies that if two witnesses came to support the man's claim that he's the original husband, she's not believed against two witnesses. Therefore, the case must be where there was only one witness, and she's believed because she disputes him. So this implies that if she was silent, she would have to leave the second husband. The Gemara asks, why is this so? Since Ula taught, Kol makom she'aminu Torah eid echad hari kan shnayim. Wherever the Torah believes a single witness, it's as though there are two witnesses here. Therefore, the first witness who claimed her husband was dead should be treated as two witnesses, and the testimony of the single witness claiming the man is her husband should not be believed against two witnesses. The Gemara answers that we're dealing with psule edus, two puzzle witnesses who support their original husband's claim. And Shmuel holds like Rabbi Nehemiah that ko makom she'aminu Torah eid echad holech acharov deos, wherever the Torah believes that one witness follow the majority of opinions. Therefore, in a case where two women testify against one man, they're treated like two men testifying against one man. The Gemara brings a second variation of Rabbi Nehemiah's teaching. And point number three, the Mishnah had taught that if her husband returns after she remarried based on the testimony of one witness, she requires a get from both husbands. The Gemara asks that while it's understandable that she certainly requires a get from her first husband, since she was married to him, why does she require a get from the second husband? Znus ba'amahu, her relationship to him, was one of znus. Rav Huna answered, Gezer Shem Yomru Gerush Zeh V'Nas Zeh. It's a Gezerah to require a get from the second husband, lest people say that the first husband divorced her, and then the second husband married her afterwards. V'nim says, Eshes Ish Yotze B'lo Get. And it will result that people mistakenly think that a married woman is walking away from a marriage without a get. Rashi explains that people think that ending a marriage doesn't require a get. So once again, the 3 points are, number one, after numerous attempts were made to bring a source that one witness is believed to permit a woman to remarry, the Gemara now explains that the source is at the Rabban. For Rabbi Zera said, he called the Aleha Betchil because of the severity with which you were severe at the end by imposing so many penalties on her. In the event that she remarries and her first husband reappears, you were lenient with her at the beginning and allowed her to remarry based on the testimony of one witness. When the Gemara asks, don't be machmir with her at the end, don't be makel with her at the beginning, and instead just require two witnesses as is biblically mandated, answers, out of concern that the woman we left as an aguna, the Rabbanan were lenient with her and permitted her to marry based on the testimony of a single witness. Point number two, the Mishnah Duff Pei Zayin Amabe stated that if a woman remarried based on a single witness, she must leave both husbands if her original husband reappears. Shmuel said she must only leave the second husband where she did not dispute him, referring to the man who came claiming to be her original husband. But where she disputes him and claims that he's an imposter, she doesn't leave the second husband. The Gemara clarifies that if two witnesses came to support the man's claim that he's the original husband, she's not believed against two witnesses. Therefore, the case must be where there was only one witness, and she's believed because she disputes him. So this implies that if she was silent, she would have to leave the second husband. The Gemara asks, why is this so? Since Ula taught, Kol makom she'aminu Torah eid echad hari kan shnayim. Wherever the Torah believes a single witness, it's as though there are two witnesses here. Therefore, the first witness who claimed her husband was dead should be treated as two witnesses, and the testimony of the single witness claiming the man is her husband should not be believed against two witnesses. The Gemara answers that we're dealing with psule edus, two puzzle witnesses who support their original husband's claim. And Shmuel holds like Rabbi Nehemiah that ko makom she'aminu Torah eid echad holech acharov deos, wherever the Torah believes that one witness follow the majority of opinions. Therefore, in a case where two women testify against one man, they're treated like two men testifying against one man. The Gemara brings a second variation of Rabbi Nehemiah's teaching. And pointing with you, the Mishnah had taught that if her husband returns after she remarried based on the testimony of one witness, she requires a get from both husbands. The Gemara asks that while it's understandable that she certainly requires a get from her first husband, since she was married to him, why did she require a get from the second husband? Znus ba'amahu, her relationship to him, was one of znus. Rav Huna answered, Gezer shemi yomru gerish zeh v'nasa zeh. It's a gezerah to require a get from the second husband, lest people say that the first husband divorced her, and then the second husband married her afterwards. V'nim says, Eshes ish yotze b'lo get. And it will result that people mistakenly think that a married woman is walking away from a marriage without a get. Rashi explains that people think that ending a marriage doesn't require a get. Alright, so now we go to our simmer dap peches, and our standard simmer is a pach, which is a garbage can or a dustbin, depending on where you live in the world. So garbage can is our simmon. So here goes. This single witness who was employed by the Save the Agunos garbage company hid inside a garbage can when he heard that Basin accepted the conflicting testimony of two women and that they required a get from the second husband lest someone say that a married woman goes out without one. So once again, in slow motion. This single witness who was employed by the Save the Agunos garbage company hid inside a garbage can. Garbage can. That must be more on duff. Peches, pach. The single witness who was employed by the Save the Agunos garbage company, which reminds us that after numerous attempts were made to bring a source that one witness is believed to permit a woman to remarry, the Gemara now explains that the source is at the Rabban, Mishum Iguna Akiluba Rabban. Out of concern that the woman will be left as an Aguna, the Rabban were lenient with her and permitted her to marry based on the testimony of a single witness. So the single witness who was employed by the Save the Agunos garbage company hid inside a garbage can when he heard that Basin accepted the conflicting testimony of two women, which reminds us, the Mishnah on Pei Zayin Amud Beis stated that if a woman remarried based on a single witness, she must leave both husbands if her original husband reappears. Shmuel said she must only leave the second husband where she did not dispute him, referring to the man who came claiming to be her original husband. But where she disputes him and claims that he's an imposter, she does not leave the second husband. After analyzing Shmuel's position, the Gemara determines that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Nehemiah, that kol makom shehamina Torah eid echad holach achar rov deos, where the Torah believes one witness follow the majority of opinions. So the single witness who was employed by the Save the Agunos garbage company hid inside a garbage can when he heard the Basin accepted the conflicting testimony of two women, and that they required a get from the second husband lest someone say that a married woman goes out without one. Which reminds us, the Mishnah had taught that if her husband returns after she married, based on the testimony of one witness, she requires a get from both husbands. The Gemara explains that even though her relationship to the second husband was one of znus, the Rabban goes her to require getting a get from him. Lest people say that the first husband divorced her and then the second husband married her afterwards, and it will result that people mistakenly think that a married woman is walking away from a marriage without a get. So once again, this single witness who was employed by the Save the Agunos garbage company hid inside a garbage can when he heard the Basin accepted the conflicting testimony of two women, and that they required a get from the second husband lest someone say that a married woman goes out without one. All right, now it's time for a four blah bah chazara. Daf pei dalad. So the simmer daf pei dalad is a launch pad. So here goes. The Kohen had yod astronaut getting married to the almana on his launch pad. Launch pad? That must mean we're on daf pei dalad. The Kohen had yod astronaut getting married to an almana on his launch pad, while his brother the Kohen Gadol stood by, which reminds us, the opening mission in the ninth parak presents four categories of women, the first category being those who are permitted to their husbands and prohibited to their yavams. The first case is Kohen had yod shenasas almana v'yeshu ach Kohen Gadol, a Kohen had yod who married an almana and he has a brother who's a Kohen Gadol. The Gemara addresses why the Mishnah said he was married to a widow, when it could have said he did kedushin with her, and she would still be forbidden to the yavam, who is a Kohen Gadol. So the Kohen had yod astronaut getting married to an alman on his launch pad, while his brother the Kohen Gadol stood by, was interrupted by a basula, who climbed up and asked why he didn't marry her, which reminds us. The Gemara continues to challenge the first example of the Mishnah and asks why the first case is that of an almana, least named basula. Let it state she was a basula who had never been married, since she will become an almana when the Kohen had yod dies. So the Kohen had yod astronaut getting married to an almana on his launch pad, while his brother the Kohen Gadol stood by, was interrupted by a basula who climbed up and asked why he didn't marry her. And he told her that as a Kohen she could marry the Challah working in the control tower. Which reminds us, Rav Yudah said in the name of Rav, Lohuzru Kesheris Lihinas L'Psuan, eligible women, referring to the daughters of Kohanim, are not prohibited to be married to Psuim such as Chalolim. Rav Bar Yitzchak's challenge to Rav's ruling is rebuffed. Daf Pehei, so the Simmer Daf Pehei is associated to a mouth and we use a dentist. So here goes. The Kohen Gadol was way overseas lecturing at a dental convention. Dental convention? Dentist? That must be on Daf Pehei, mouth. So the Kohen Gadol who was away overseas lecturing at a dental convention when he got a call that his Almana wife had taken out a loan to cover her mazonos, which reminds us, Rabbi Elazar asked Rabbi Yochanan, if an Almana married a Kohen Gadol or a Grusha or a Chalutza married a Kohen Hedyot, Yesh lehem mazonos or ein lehem mazonos, do they have the right to sustenance or not when the husband went overseas and she borrowed money and used it to support herself? Rabbi Yochanan answered that while she can claim the ksuba itself, which is collected upon leaving the marriage, she cannot claim mazonos, which might cause her to stay with him. So the Kohen Gadol who was away overseas lecturing at a dental convention when he got a call that his Almana wife had taken out a loan to cover her mazonos, overheard a dentist tell his Shnia wife that she was not going to receive her ksuba like her Almana friend got from the Kohen Gadol, which reminds us it was taught in a brisa an Almana to a Kohen Gadol or a Grusha or Chalutza to a Kohen Hedyot, she receives her ksuba, peros, mazonos, and worn out garments, referring to garments that she brought into the marriage, she may take with her when the marriage ends, whereas Shnios receive none of them. The brisa brings three explanations for the distinction. Revi says the distinction is the case of the Almana to a Kohen Gadol is a deraisa, v'divrei Torah ein tzrichin chizuk, and deraisa law does not require chizuk, whereas a derabban like Shnios does require chizuk. So the Kohen Gadol was away overseas lecturing at a dental convention when he got a call that his Almana wife had taken out a loan to cover her mazonos, overheard a dentist tell a Shnia wife that she was not going to receive her ksuba like her Almana friend got from the Kohen Gadol, since she was the one who persuaded him to get married. Which reminds us, the brisa brought a third explanation why the Almana to a Kohen Gadol receives a ksuba, whereas the Shnia does not. In the case of the Almana to a Kohen Gadol, Zehu Margila, it's the man who persuades the woman to marry him. A woman would not want to enter a marriage which disqualifies her, her husband, and her children, and where her husband would be angry with her, that she causes a psul for him and his children. In the case of the Shnia, Zohi Margilaso, it's she that persuades the man to marry her. Since the marriage will not disqualify her, her husband, or her children, she has nothing to lose, and therefore persuades him.
Daf Pei Vav, so the Simmer Daf Pei Vav is police. So here goes.
The Maaser Rishon police, that must mean learned Daf Pei Vav. The Maaser Rishon police who prevented Maaser Rishon from being given to Zarim, which reminds us that Rav Meir's source that Maaser Rishon is Asur to Zarim is the pasuk that states, Kes Maaser B'nei Yisrael Asher Yerimu Hashem Truma, for the Maaser of the Jewish people that they will designate to Hashem as Truma, I have given to the Levim as an inheritance. By describing Maaser as Truma, the pasuk is teaching, Ma Truma Asur Lazarim of Maaser Rishon Asur Lazarim. Just as Truma is forbidden to Zarim, so too Maaser Rishon is forbidden to Zarim. The Rabbanan who hold that Maaser Rishon is Mutter to Zarim explain the pasuk to teach Matruma Tovelas of Maaser Rishon Nami Tovel, just as Truma affects the law of Tevel, which Rashi explains to mean that if someone eats Tevel where Truma has not been separated, he's Chayv Misa B'dei Shemayim, so too if one eats Tevel where Maaser Rishon has not been separated, he's Chayv Misa B'dei Shemayim. So the Maaser Rishon police who prevented Maaser Rishon from being given to Zarim, as well as to Kohanim, to the delight of the Levim, which reminds us, the Gemara explains that Rabbi Kiva's source that Maaser Rishon may only be given to Levim is the pasuk that states, Vel Levim to the Levim shall you speak, and you shall say to them when you take Maaser. The pasuk is specifically addressing Levim. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who holds that Maaser Rishon may also be given to Kohanim, would respond and explain the pasuk in light of what Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi said. Be'estrim ba'arba makomos nikra Kohanim Levim. In 24 places in Tanakh, Kohanim are called the Levim, and this pasuk would be one of them. So, the Maaser Rishon police who prevented Maaser Rishon from being given to Zarim, as well as to Kohanim to the delight of the Levim, received a message from police headquarters that the Levim were penalized and to distribute the Maaser instead to the poor. Which reminds us, Rabbi Yonasan and the elders disagree on the nature of the penalty to the Levim who did not ascend from Babel regarding Maaser Rishon. One who holds Kansalanim, the penalty required the Maaser be given to the poor, which the Mefarshim explained means that it may also be given to the poor. This would deprive the Levim of some of the Maaser. The other one holds that Kohanim be made to Masan Anim Ninu. When Kohanim are Tame, they are poor because they cannot eat Truma then, so as a decree, the Maaser be given to them. Da Pei Zayin, so the Sim Da Pei Zayin is a golden Pez candy dispenser. So here goes. The little bus cone eating from her golden Pez candy dispenser. Golden Pez candy dispenser? That must be learned off Pei Zion. The little bus cone eating from her golden Pez candy dispenser, who turned away her divorced sister, who came to eat from the chaz of his shok, which reminds us it was taught in the brisa when she, referring to a bus cohen, returns to her father's house after being widowed or divorced from a non-cohen. She returns to her right to eat truma, but she does not return to her right to eat from the chaz of his shok. The Gemara brings five different sources for this din. Rav Safra said, the pasuk states, Melechem Afia Tochel, she may eat from her father's bread, Lechem V'lo Basar, bread, but not meat. So,
the little Bas Cohen eating from her golden Pez candy dispenser, who turned away her divorced sister, who came to eat from the Chaz V'Shog, and then gave one candy to her pregnant sister, and two to the one with a child, who were forbidden from Truma. Which reminds us, from the Pasuk addressing the right of a Bas Cohen to return to eat Truma in her father's house, we learn two exclusions. From Vazera Einla, she has no offspring, we learn that if she has a child that is already born, she may not eat Truma. And from Kenuhurea, as in her youth, we learn that she may not eat Truma if she's pregnant. The Gemara explains why both teachings are needed. So, the little Bas Cohen eating from her golden Pez candy dispenser, who turned away her divorced sister who came to eat from the Chaz V'Shog, and then gave one candy to her pregnant sister, and two to the one with the child, who were forbidden from Truma, didn't know what to give her sister, whose husband died overseas, based on the testimony of 1-8. Which reminds us, the opening mission of the 10th parak states, Isha Shahok Bala Medinas Yam, Uvava Amrula, Meis Balich, Vinises, concerning a woman whose husband went overseas and they came and reported to her, your husband died, and she went and married another man, and afterwards her first husband returned, rendering her second marriage void, she faces 16 consequences, beginning with the requirement to leave both husbands. The Gemara explains that even though the Mishnah stated they came and told her, which implies that two witnesses came, it can be inferred from the Sefer that the Reish is dealing with a case where she got remarried based on Eid Echot, the testimony of one witness. All right, that concludes today's shiur. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldman Zichu wishing you a great day and great learning.